our speaker Zoe from Bethesda, Maryland.
Hi, folks. I'm Zoe. I'm alcoholic. And hi to everyone on Zoom. Oh, yeah. I mean, they can see my mouth. Yeah, okay, I have eyes. That's good. That's perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me tonight. I have been kept sober since July 5th of 2016. I have a sponsor. Her name is Holly, and she has a sponsor named Joni. And I have a home group, which is the All Are Welcome group of Chevy Chase, Maryland. So we meet Monday nights at 8:15 in Chevy Chase. If you're up in the DC area, it's a really great meeting. It's my favorite night of the week. And I hope that everyone feels that way about their home group. Absolutely. And I know that this is a home group meeting, and I've been here a couple times before, and I know that the people who come here feel that way too. And I have the privilege of sponsoring other alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank you for having me come out tonight. And thank you to my friends, Emma and Sarah, for driving down from DC with me. It's always good to have friends. It was just, we just had so much fun in the car. And I just like, you know, I remember being a couple years sober, and I think I was about 2.5 or 3 years sober the first time that I was hanging out with people from AA. We were just like getting coffee before the meeting. It was around this time of year, so it was nice out. And we were just getting coffee at the coffee shop down the street from the meeting. And it was the first time that I was just with other alcoholics and didn't care what they were thinking about me and if I was cool enough to hang out with them. And I know that that probably happens a lot earlier for some people, but you know, and a lot of my experiences, you know, in the book, it says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And for me, it's like sometimes slowly, sometimes slower. I've always been, it's always just like taken me a little bit longer to learn these things, but I really am grateful for those experiences. I think we're going to try and find an IHOP on the way home. And those types of things just like weren't really what I wanted when I came here. You know, when I got sober because I could no longer stand the way that I felt anymore. But I had no picture of what something different would look like. I had no picture of what feeling different or having a different life would look like. And, so I had nothing to compare it to. And I am so grateful that it is this. So I am a talker. I know that this is an hour speaker meeting. I can talk for a long time. it's that. I know Billy was like, you know, if you can't fill up the whole hour, I was like, I got you. You know, so we'll have fun. So I am from Silver Spring, Maryland, right outside DC. And that was, it was just such a great place to grow up. You know, I had a rough time as a kid. I was just like, you know, somewhat due to my circumstances, but mostly just due to like who I am as a person. But that place, you know, and I really love to talk about it because I was raised in a home, you know, my parents are very good people. I have a younger brother who is, I just absolutely adore, and all very good people, but we had our stuff. We had a lot of financial insecurity. We moved out a lot. We got foreclosed on. We evicted a lot and got evicted a lot. And so we just bounced around from place to place. And, you know, the place that I grew up was when my parents couldn't always be there for us, there were other people who were. And it was something that I have only really seen replicated, like really just a community taking care of one another in a way that I've only seen replicated inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was really beautiful. And I, like, as a kid, I ran around kind of feral, and I was involved in a lot, and I kept myself busy from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep, because I just did not know how to be in myself, because I figured out, you know, very early that the things that go on between my ears are a war zone. It's just like, you know, just like I close my eyes and it is like a horror movie playing 24/7. And those are my earliest memories. Like, it was just not a good time. And so anything that I could do to get out of that. So I was just involved. I played a sport. I swam. And the thing with swimming is you practice twice a day. And like, you are busy, you are tired all the time. So I loved that. I started powerlifting as a teenager too. So I was, you know, doing that type of stuff. And I was really active in school because that was a way that I found that it was really a way that I found, like, I do something well and I get attention or reward. It was very like, it was like math. You plug in this and you get the result that you want. And that's how I thought all of life could be. But I was incorrect because that's not how it is. And so I just really, really latched on to attention from other people, because it would, you know, it would fill me up for a little bit. And then I would have to get more. And I started this, like, I had this obsessive thinking where I would latch onto something that I wanted that I thought would make me change the way that I felt. And what this, usually it was someone's approval, usually another adult. I didn't care about people my own age, but I wanted a lot of like attention from adults. And if you relate to that, there are like professionals that help you with that. They help me a lot too. And I was, always looking for a gold star everywhere that I went. And but nothing was ever really enough for me. And I was like, I was someone who my parents started giving me sleeping pills when I was 7 because I couldn't sleep at night. And I was always sweating and I was always out of breath. And like, anytime I go to the doctor, they take my pulse. It was 100. I was like that, all the time. And it was really, really exhausting to live that way. And I had this idea of the type of kid that I wanted to be, which I was really active in school. Like I said, I played a couple sports and, I really, my parents really drilled into me, like, go to school, get a good education. And that's the type of person I wanted to be. I really did want to be that person and follow that path. But I also was like dying at 8 years old, and I knew what alcohol could do for people. My parents don't really drink anymore much. But I've heard stories about what they did in their 20s. And they've come to meetings with me when I've like picked up chips or celebrations. They're like, that sounds like my 20s. I was like, do you have something you want to tell me? but they're fine, and they don't really drink very much. But my extended family, it's a really big part of our family life. And so I grew up seeing people get hammered, and like we would have these barbecues and cookouts and everyone was having a good time, and I could see what it would do. And I was very much like, I don't want to go down that path, but I also am very aware of the way that I feel, and I don't know how much longer I can just live the way that I am. I'm like 8-9 years old, and I remember, like, as much as I wanted to be this really good kid, I was keenly aware of what alcohol could do. So I was a latchkey kid. And my favorite show at this age was Law and Order, which might explain a thing or two. I was coming home from school and putting on Law and Order. And I just remember vividly, like, watching a couple episodes where, after a long day of fighting crime, the detectives would, be in the captain's office and unscrew a bottle of something and like visibly relax. And of course these are actors on TV, but that's what they're paid to do. And I would see that with my family. And I just remember thinking, is it really that easy that you can take a sip of something and it would change your perspective on the world and change the experience that you have in life? Because I desperately wanted that. And I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off in all of these, in school, in sports, and talking to this person and trying to have this, and trying to have this hobby and, trying to do all these things to change the way that I felt, and it would last just a little bit before I was back to the drawing board and I had to do something else. And I really related to that, this is kind of a joke, but it really felt that way, that like I had had a long day of the third grade. It felt extremely difficult to be who I was. And so by the time I got drunk for the first time, which was not my first drink, if I had to guess, I had, knowing my family, I probably had my first drink when I was like 4. My grandpa, who is probably one of us, he would pour beer into little Dixie cups and give it to us. And, and I would always drink mine and run back for more. And depending on how deep into his cups he was, I might get a couple of cups of beer, as a kid. But the first time I got drunk, I was probably 12 or 13. And I absolutely needed it by then. And I could have used a drunk long before then, for sure. But I was with my grandparents. They live up in New Jersey and I was visiting them. And my grandparents, even like the immense process is amazing. And I have learned how to behave differently as a result of this program. We still have a difficult relationship. And I was at this dinner table and my grandfather was drunk. And he was telling me that the only shot I had in life would be to like, he was like, you got to go to college and then you have to join the army. And I'm like, I'm 12, and I just was so uncomfortable. And they're the type of people that like, they will give you your opinion about you, whether or not you ask. And I was really uncomfortable. And at some point I got offered a beer, and any idea I had about wanting to stay away from drugs and alcohol was just out the window because I was like, yes. And I paced myself with that beer at the table. But what happened, which I didn't know why this happened, didn't happen the other times that I had drank, was I experienced the effect produced by alcohol. And what happened was I remember feeling really warm and, you know, the way that I liken this is to, if you ever watched the old, Charlie Brown shows, and like the parent on the phone, that rah, 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 that's kind of how their voices sounded to me. And I, you know, I've heard people talk about using alcohol as a way to connect with other people. But at that point, you know, my spiritual disease, I, even at the age of like 12 or whatever, had already really ravaged me to the point that I didn't really desire a connection with other people anymore. I just didn't want to think and I didn't want to feel. And so I remember as the alcohol was hitting my stomach, feeling alone in a very beautiful and exquisite way. And it didn't matter what they were saying. And I could just be there and I could just let them be rude. and I didn't care. You know, and like I said, I paced myself with that beer at the table. And then, you know, after they went to sleep, my room was in the basement next to their beer fridge, which is what they have in their house. And I stole more and I would drink it until I went to sleep. And I, like from that very, very first time getting drunk, I did that the rest of my trip and I hid the bottles, the empty bottles in my suitcase to dispose of when I got back home to Maryland. Cause I lived in a high rise apartment with a chute. So I could just, you know, throw them down there and no one would know. Cause I was so afraid they were going to see the bottles in the recycling bin. My grandfather had so many bottles, like no one would have noticed. No one was paying attention. But yeah, from the first time getting drunk, I was already thinking about how this is something that works. And, you know, I always say that alcohol was not a perfect solution for me. It wasn't, but it was the best one that I had found. And I, you know, in, whether consciously or not, I knew I wasn't going to let it get away that easy. So I knew from that first time getting drunk, I talk about this all the time, that there were two things that I learned very quickly. And the first was that my drinking would have to be protected because something this valuable and this precious to me, I'm not going to let anyone get in the way of that just yet. And so I was already, you know, hiding it from the start. And I did a lot of drinking with my family, but like the adults in my life were actually freely providing me alcohol. My mom was a cool mom. And she was, you know, we'd rather you do it in the house than get caught somewhere. And, like, and even just like people were, you know, drunk enough that like they wouldn't really notice how much I was drinking unless I got like really, really wasted. And the second thing that I realized was that I was drinking for reasons that were different from other people. You know, even in a family that has what I think might be alcoholism, I can't really say that for sure. You know, there are either alcoholics or heavy drinkers in my family, but the people who were getting together drinking, these people that I were drinking, that I was drinking with, there was still this air of, we're trying to have a good time. We're trying to unwind. They were trading stories. They were playing bocce and cornhole. And, you know, we were firing up the grill and there was music and laughter. And I'm just like, you idiots. You know, that's not really what I want to do when I drink. And I know that like for some people do have the experience of drinking being fun for a while, but you know, like I said, I was really, my spiritual malady had already really like destroyed my soul enough by the time that I started drinking, that, you know, once I found out what alcohol could do for me, I don't really think I stood a chance at a social drink. And my drinking was about from the very beginning, it was about keeping me alive until I found Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I drank to forget, I drank not to feel, I drank to numb out. And you know, it didn't take very long for that to turn into drinking to be able to get through the night without killing myself, because that's where I get. I'm very morbid, I'm very morose, and eventually I don't want to be here anymore because of the way that I treat people and the way that I treat myself, and that's a lot of what it looks like. You know, I would have a glass or two with my family. You know, it would be like, here, have a little, and then I was stealing around a corner in a closet. In the basement, in the shower, remember a shower beer? Am I right? I drink a lot of seltzer now and I still pop one open in the shower several times. And so I was always, you know, doing something in secret. And I did a lot of, you know, my heaviest drinking by myself. And I'm not even in high school yet when I'm doing this. And, you know, I don't really have too many fun stories about my drinking because I was a really sad, angry kid who drank to feel better. And, you know, I got sober super young. I got sober at 18. I was 3 weeks after I graduated high school. I got shipped off to rehab. But what I noticed would start to happen was I did start, like, I still had all these aspirations and goals, and then I had like my actions. And I noticed that my ability to be the type of person that I wanted to be, because I was always someone who was extremely overconfident in my abilities, you know, and part of my upbringing, you know, I did grow up fast in a lot of ways. I learned how to take care of myself at a very young age, and I learned how to take care of other people at a very young age. And, you know, I was kind of like parentized while I was still a kid. And that really fed my ego of like, I'm a person who gets stuff done. You know, I don't need sleep. I don't need sick days. And I was just someone who could just take care of things and overload my schedule. And I could still play the sports and I could still get straight A's and I could, you know, still maintain somewhat of a social life, although I wasn't really that pleasant to be around. But I just noticed that my ability to do that was starting to slip. And my world was getting smaller, not because I was actively giving things up to go drinking. It wasn't really like that. My drinking was like, I drank when I could. And in the in-between periods, I was like insane. And I'll talk about that in a second. But I drank when I could, which sometimes was frequently and sometimes not that often. Like I said, I would rather be physically sober and protect my chance at drinking again than go all out and have that ruin. That's how important it was to me. I needed to make sure that it was still going to be a viable solution for me in the future while I was still a minor. Where was it going with that? I don't know. We'll figure it out. I wasn't actively giving these things up to drink, but I just noticed that like, as I got deeper into my alcoholism, my capacity to care about things gradually diminished because things like having hobbies, things like having relationships, like having self-respect, having self-esteem, like being nice to people slowly became more and more of a luxury. The more that my drinking and my life in general just became about survival, you know, my last like 6 to 8 months of drinking were really just trying to keep my head above water. And I noticed these things happening really without my permission and out of my control. And it did start to scare me, you know, and I like, my friends weren't really drinking until less than a year before I got sober. So I wasn't even doing this stuff with people my age. And I was just really trying to keep it together as best I could, which wasn't great. Like, that's the thing, the best that I could do was actually not that great. You know, and I caused a lot of harm to people. I was emotionally abusive to my parents, my poor younger brother, who my younger brother is in therapy for the things that I did to him when we were children. And again, like, that was the best that I could do. And what I found here is like, you know, I just remember seeing this start to happen around me and not quite understanding, but also understanding that I did take those actions, but I wasn't trying to. And it really felt like I was a victim of my own life because I would set out for the day with an intention of the person that I wanted to be and the way that I wanted to act, and something completely different would happen. And I did not understand. And so too with alcohol, you know, there came times where my drinking wasn't really on my radar very much, but I just remembered there was this like, pre-collegiate program for school that I studied for a really long time to get into. I studied for like 2 years and it was really selective and I got into it. And I was so happy and so proud of myself. And I was entering high school and I was like, I don't want to fall in with a certain type of crowd. And I didn't, but I ended up dropping out of that program. You know, I'd gotten drunk and I just like didn't understand why. And I had this really bad night and I was like, I don't think I can handle this workload. And I just found myself returning to drinking in a way that didn't quite make sense. Because I, like I said, I had these ambitions and goals and these things that I wanted to do, and drinking and was not on that path, but every so often I would find myself doing it anyway, and it did not make sense to me. And even it wouldn't even click to me in the moment. Sometimes it would be the day after or a few days after it would settle in that I had gotten drunk, and I just didn't understand how we had gotten there. And it grew progressively scarier because I spent a lot of time in untreated alcoholism. And that for me is the state in which I am in when I don't have a spiritual solution, but I am also physically sober. Because even if I am drinking, I might be in active alcoholism, but my alcoholism, which centers in my mind, is being treated by alcohol. It is being treated by something that will kill me. But like that, I mean, it says in our literature that we drink essentially because we like the effect produced by alcohol, that we are restless, irritable, and discontented until we can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And like that space, like the space that you're in right before you get drunk, like that for me is my untreated alcoholism. And as an alcoholic, it's the most painful place I can be, is to be tight without a solution. And, because of the nature of my drinking, I spent a lot of time living that way. And, you know, you do that for a couple of years and it is exhausting, because like I said, I got sober when I was 18 and it felt like I had been alive for a really long time. And I just remember thinking like, I don't know how much more I can do of this. And like people are, you know, the kids that I grew up with that were a few years older than me, going to college, and then people are graduating and having jobs. And I was just like, I spent my whole childhood wanting to be a successful, accomplished adult and just thinking, I don't know how I can do this, because I wasn't able to do really simple things. Like I remember so clearly, I talk about this all the time, of waking up in the morning and just thinking like, okay, I'm gonna shower. I'm gonna eat 3 meals. I'm gonna be nice to my mom. I'm not gonna be mean to my brother. I'm gonna go to school. I'm gonna stay the whole time. I'm gonna be on time to work. Like really simple stuff, like simple everyday life stuff. And just like, I would sit down, I would look myself in the mirror, like, we're gonna do it. And I couldn't do any of it. And that is me, like, I didn't even have to be drinking to function that way. You know, that was me sober. And I remember this is a little, I don't know, you guys might appreciate this. And if you don't, you'll tell me after a meeting. But I remember getting in this argument with my mom. I mean, we had a really, really tough relationship when I was a teenager, that again has been saved by the amends process. But she was like, I was easier to be around when I was drunk. And I remember her getting mad at me and saying, you know what? One day we're going to get you drunk and high and you're going to be such nice of a person. And she was like, you know, there were times where I was drinking and like, you know, we would get along just fine. And, I was a lot more relaxed when you put a few drinks in me. And when I wasn't, I was just a complete terror to be around. And I remember my mom telling me, we never knew who was coming down the stairs in the morning. And everyone walked on eggshells around me. And I just created this air of drama and chaos and violence, honestly, wherever I went. I brought that wherever I went. You know, for a while, I could just confine it to home. And I started bringing it into school and I started bringing it into the sports teams. And my world got really, really small, again, without my permission. And, I remember the last 6 months of my drinking, just every day was the same. And it wasn't because I was like drinking all the time and like blacking out either. Like, you know, I would drink when I could, but I just felt so trapped in my behavior, even when I was sober. And I just remember, like, I would wake up in the mornings, some mornings, and I would scream into the pillow because I was like, I can't believe you're going to make me do another day. I can't believe I have to live like this another day. And what was happening at the time was alcohol, which had worked for me, again, not perfectly, but it worked for me enough for so long, was slowly starting to not work anymore. And I started to become really, really afraid, because the big way that I was able to rationalize what I was doing, despite like all the, like, you know, like I was seeing a therapist at the time who was like, you know, you with your history, your family history, and some of the other things going on, like drinking is not a good idea for you. Alcohol is a depressant. You seem to be struggling with that. And I had all these good reasons not to drink, and I was doing it anyways. But the reason that I could rationalize that was because I still felt like I had some way of controlling it, because I could, for a while, I could put down a drink once I started. And I remember feeling like, and it would hurt. like it wasn't comfortable, and it would, my skin would feel really tight. And I like physically, like I'll just demonstrate it, like, you know, like that. it felt like that to do it, but I could do it. If it was to protect my drinking, I could do it, I could put it down. But it was getting more and more difficult to do that. And I was only like 17, maybe 18 at the time. And I remember being really, really afraid of what is going to happen when the day comes when I am no longer able to do this, because I had seen movies and I know that people do stupid things when they are drunk. And I had this really big ego. That was not going to be me. That's why I didn't drink with people my age. You know, I did not go to parties because you guys are not going to catch me looking stupid. And so I really, you know, tried to keep all of that under wraps, which is why I would, you know, lock myself in my closet and pass out there on a pile of dirty clothes. It was real glamorous. And I just was like really afraid that like I was about to graduate high school. And I had this idea that I'll go off to college and have a college experience, whatever that is. And like the way I was thinking about it was I'll have my parents off my back. I'll be away from home. I'll be with other like-minded intellectuals. And like, I really love that part in Bill's story when he's trying to justify to Lois about how, you know, men of genius create their greatest works while drunk. I was a really big like literature snob. And I really idolized the writers like Ernest Hemingway, who wrote these books that we still study in school. And they were alcoholics who drank a lot. And then they blew their head off with a shotgun. I was like, that is my dream. Like, what else would you want possibly want? People are still talking about me after I am dead. And I can, you know, be a jerk with very little consequences. And it doesn't matter because I created something great. So I was really looking forward to that piece of it, but I had to get there. And I had this summer coming up where things were really, really rough at home. They were really, really rough mentally. And I was drinking where I could, but my mom was starting to catch on a little bit about like, you know, she caught me stealing alcohol a couple of times and she was like, I mean, okay, but you're not doing well. So like, why are you doing this? You know, we drink socially all the time, but this isn't like 11 PM on a Tuesday is not a social occurrence. and so I was just like, I really felt like my drinking was threatened. And I was like, okay, if I can get through this summer sober, or if I can get through the summer without causing any trouble, that would be awesome. But I was not convinced I was going to be able to do that, you know, because already I felt like my control over alcohol was slipping. I felt like my ability to just like be without alcohol, but just live in the crazy, which was something that was painful. But again, I was willing to do for the chance to drink again. My tolerance for that was drastically diminishing. And I remember being very, very scared of like, what is going to happen when either I can't control my drinking or what's going to happen when drinking no longer works for me. And like I said, you know, I was 18 years old and I was really, really tired and I had no idea what to do. And at that point, it really didn't take much for me to just not want to do this anymore. And I ended up, it was about 3 weeks after I graduated. It was my brother, the day before my brother's birthday. So it was actually 4th of July in 2016. And I like had gotten in a fight with my mom and then I got in a fight with my dad later that evening. And like, that was it. That was all it took. I ran into the medicine cabinet and I swallowed everything I could. And I laid down on my bathroom floor and I did not intend to wake up. And my mom had left the house and she was really upset with me. She took my brother with her because I don't know what I was doing, but it wasn't safe for them to be in the house. That is the point. And she had gone to the store, I guess. And for whatever reason, she was so angry and she said she didn't want to be around me. But while she was at the store, she called me. And I don't know why she did that, but she called me and she asked if I wanted anything. And at that point, everything that I had taken had kind of started to hit me and it started affecting my speech. And she knew something was wrong and she came home. And if she hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't be here. You know, so I ended up overdosing on acetaminophen, which is Tylenol. And I know that there's a lot harder stuff out there, but it did almost kill me. And you know, I had literally just graduated. My diploma hadn't even come in the mail yet. And my parents were told that I wasn't gonna make it through the night. And I remember my father, God, since I have some time, I'll talk about this for a second. You know, my dad was like, he was always there. My parents were still married. He lived in our house. But he was just kind of aloof. You know, he did a lot of his own stuff and we didn't really start developing an actual relationship. Like we were just kind of roommates for the first like 12, 13 years of my life. And we didn't really develop a relationship until around the time that I started drinking. And so he's like getting to know his kid as I am starting to die of alcoholism. And that was really the only person, version of me that he knew. And all of a sudden I am like about to die for real. And he was a wreck. And I remember my mom just looked really relieved. And she, you know, she had started planning my funeral long before. And I remember her just being like, she was just really relieved. And I think she was happy that at least it was going to be over and she wouldn't have to worry about this anymore, you know? And I remember I didn't even care. And the crazy part was like, I just want to talk about this for a second because it really, for me, it shows like that part of Bill's story when he was, when he felt just like the circle of quicksand around him had grown so much. I mean, I was in so much physical pain. I've never experienced anything like it since. And I really hope I never do. And like, it felt like my insides and my organs were on fire, but my extremities were starting to numb. And so I was just like waiting for that to get to the rest of it and incredibly painful. It would have been a horrible way to die, but my head was completely clear because I just remember thinking, I just need to get through this a couple of hours, whatever it is. And then I don't have to do it anymore. And I was really, really pleased with that, you know, as my family is just like a wreck next to me. And I remember thinking to my dad, shut up, why are you crying? I really didn't care. And then I woke up in the ICU and I was pissed. You know, I was like, are you kidding me? I can't even kill myself, right? And then I got shipped off to Florida. You know, it was just like straight to rehab. You know, and I got sent to this facility that I wasn't actually being treated for alcoholism or substance abuse, because no one really knew that it was going on. Like I said, it wasn't on my radar and it actually really wasn't on very many other people's. It's just that like when you swallow two bottles of Tylenol, you get sent away to deal with that. And so I'm in this facility in Florida and it's hot and it's Florida. It's not my favorite place. And I you know, I wasn't having a great time, but you know, my grandmaster plan had failed and it was a real big punch to my ego. And I didn't really know what I was gonna do. Because dying didn't work, but I also didn't know how to live. So I was really kind of, I was in a pickle there. But what happened was like, there were people in that rehab who were being treated for alcoholism. And I started, you know, I got my little rehab friends and I started talking to them and they were the ones who were the first ones to put my feelings into words. The metaphor I always use is like, if you guys have dogs or if you've been around dogs and you say their favorite words, like walk or food or outside and their ears go like, ding. It's like, that's kind of what happened to me where it was, they, without knowing, planted a seed of what it was like to be me. Because I remember, you know, my entire life, I thought I was the only person with a brain like mine, which was a really isolatory way to view the world. But that's how I thought. And you know, I'm so misunderstood and no one understands me. But it really did feel that way. And so here are these people talking about the way that I felt. And you know, they're drinking and drugging looked, I didn't do drugs, so that's not even a part of it. It's okay if it is for you, that's just, you know, for me, which is actually something that, you know, getting sober young, I actually struggled to relate to because a lot of the people who did get sober young were doing drugs. And I was like, does the fact that I didn't do drugs mean I'm not alcoholic? I don't know. That's not a criteria if anyone's wondering. but they were the ones who were talking about the way that they felt and the way that drinking made them feel. But most specifically, the way that they felt when they were sober. That was what made me identify my alcoholism, was not necessarily what alcohol did to me, but how I felt in its absence, how it felt to be stone cold sober with no solution, was what made me think that there was something going on here. And I begged the treatment workers to let me go to a meeting. And they were like, Zoe, that's for alcoholics. And I mean, I had to beg for this. So I don't know what kind of willingness was going on when I was in that rehab. I have not experienced anything like it since. But I was just like, I have to go to this meeting. And my very first meeting, again, in the rehab in Florida, gentleman named Keith, who came in, and I don't know what he talked about, but I just remember that he opened the meeting. His opening was, the year was 1972, the country, and he clapped, Vietnam. And he started talking about drinking while he was in the army. And that's all I remember from that meeting. I don't know how you follow that. I really don't. I guess he talked about alcoholism at some point, because I remember leaving that meeting and saying, this is the weirdest place I've ever been and I can't wait to come back tomorrow. And that's what I did. I started going to the meetings in the treatment center. And, you know, I still didn't know. I didn't always relate to the circumstances of people's drinking. And I found that like, there are, over time, I've met a couple people, like my friend Emma, you know, we've been able to relate over our experiences, but there are a lot of people I don't relate to their drinking, but I relate to their alcoholism. And that's what I was doing. I didn't have the words for that at the time, but that's what was happening to me. I was relating to their alcoholism. And over time I began to relate to their solution. And, you know, all I knew how to do was go to meetings. That's what I did when I came home. And it took me a little bit to get plugged in the group that I am in today. And like my first couple years of sobriety, I went to a lot of meetings. I actually didn't start out going to a lot of meetings because people were like, go to a meeting every day. I was like, that's a lot. I was like, y'all do too much. And that just, that just seemed like a whole lot for me. But the more that I started to feel at home here, the more I wanted to come. And I love talking about this group that I discovered when I was a couple months sober. It still meets. It's in Rockville, Maryland. And I actually live very close to it now. But it's on Wednesday nights, and it's a Steps and Traditions meeting. And I remember very shortly after I had gotten out of rehab, like I had picked up a 2-month chip. And I posted it on my Snapchat story because I didn't know anything about anonymity. And this guy that I had like either been on a date on with, or we were going to, I don't know, but he saw it. He was like, oh, are you in recovery? And I was like, yes, I didn't have a sponsor. I hadn't worked a study. And he said, why don't I take you to a meeting? And so he and his friend picked me up and took me to that meeting. And the beautiful part of that is all three of us are still sober today. And I think that's really incredible. You know, I haven't had very many conversations with either of them since, but I am still so, so grateful for them. And I met my first sponsor at that meeting on Wednesday nights. And whatever they brought me, and I think they were really uncomfortable about being two men, like bringing me to a meeting because we were young and they were aware of how that looked. So they brought me and they were like, go talk to some women. And I was so scared, but I met some people at that meeting that I'm still really good friends with today. Like I said, I met my first sponsor there, and something happened at that meeting where I just like, I really wanted to go back there. And it was the only meeting that made me feel that way. I got my first service position there. I was a greeter, which is the best thing to do when you're new, because you can't pretend like you are chill because you're not, you know, and people don't, they've never seen you before. And I was able to get a lot of connections that way. But I just loved that meeting, and something would happen where like from the time the meeting started to the time the meeting ended, the way that I felt before, I felt completely different after. And that's like, I have a really good friend who talks about how, you know, when she was new, her second step was just going to the meeting. And I did that, you know, and I still had no idea of anything about my alcoholism. It would be several years before I actually had a solid first step. But something happened in that meeting that got me to start to care about it. And I picked up a lot of service there and I started to care about other meetings. But what was really beautiful for me was I noticed myself starting to care about the people in the meeting. You know, because those times when I would wake up in the morning and say like, I'm not going to be mean to my mom. I'm going to try and be a good friend today. I'm going to try and go to school. And it's just like, it felt like I was spinning my wheels. Like I felt like I was putting work in and I just couldn't produce and nothing would happen. And here I am. I had a car and I would drive people around. And I remember the first time I drove a friend home and she didn't get out of the car. She just started crying. And she was like, I have to tell you something. I haven't told my sponsor yet. And the first time that happened and like actually feeling something for her and feeling, and I didn't have a lot of time sober. I was a couple months and just like, it was the first time I noticed myself actually caring for somebody in the way that I'd always wanted to, but I just never felt capable of. And things like that started to happen. I really started to care about you guys and develop friends. And, you know, I had a sponsor. I was trying to work the steps, but I was just really, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And I was really afraid by like the fact that I related to some stuff, but not other things meant that I couldn't be here. But if I couldn't be here, then what was I going to do? You know, this was the last stop for me. So if I couldn't be here, then I didn't know where I was going to go. And whatever you guys had given me had at least made me not want to die anymore. And it was the first time that I had felt any sort of hope. You know, and I just kind of, I tried to hang on for a little bit, like pretending I really understood. It talks about in, I want to say There Is a Solution, alcoholic properly armed with the facts about themselves, which was explained to me as not just being able to recite the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession out of the literature, but to have examples of my own experience of what those are, of using my own personal experience to then help another alcoholic and give them something to relate to. You know, because I like school, you know, I could recite all the definitions and things, but I didn't understand how those specifically applied to me. You know, and I was maybe like 9 months sober, and I really wanted to do a fourth step because I wanted to fit in with people. The people that I came in with were doing that. So I wanted to do that. And I wrote it. It wasn't great, but I wrote it, and I called my sponsor, and she didn't answer. And she didn't answer for a really long time. And I said, and she finally got back to me. I said, I'm ready to do my fifth step. And she said, I don't think I'm alcoholic. And so I was already struggling with whether or not I was alcoholic at the time. And after that, like the little bit of trust that I've been able to trust anyone with just out the window, you know, so it took me, and that's not blaming her for that. That's just, you know, my experience. It took me a really long time to then be able, it was probably maybe 6 or 8 months later that I was over a year and a half removed from alcohol. So I was physically sober and I was here. I had service. I was going to meetings. I had been sort of sponsored to the best of my ability. I still had a lot of walls up, but like, that was what I was capable of at the time. And I felt the same way that I did when I had come in, and the people around me weren't feeling that way. They weren't doing that. They were getting better, and I didn't know what was wrong. And so I found the one woman that I felt like I could trust. And I asked her, I didn't even ask her to sponsor me. I asked her to take me through the steps. And I said, I don't know if I need to be here or not. I said, I relate to you guys somewhat, and I relate to you specifically. And I don't know if I need to be here, but I really want to figure it out. And I want to get better. And she said, why don't we start with the doctor's opinion? And she was the third person at that point to take me through the literature. But we went at the doctor's opinion. It's like 6 pages. We spent 6 hours going through it because I'm a pretty literate individual, I like to think, but I was just like we would read a sentence and we'd have to talk about it. Cause I was just thinking about so much, and she spent so much time with me. And I, you know, the last time I was at this meeting, I came with her to hear her speak here. She's not my sponsor today, but I wouldn't be alive without her for sure. And she spent so much time with me. And, you know, when we finished going over the doctor's opinion, more about alcoholism, Bill's story, and there's a solution, when we finally finished, after it took us like 5 meetings to go through those chapters, we went to a meeting and it was on the first step. And she told me to share. And when meetings, we introduce ourselves as alcoholics. And I said that I was an alcoholic. And it was the first time that I didn't feel like a fraud when I was saying that. And she helped me look back on, you know, these parts of my drinking, I remember explaining how, like, when we would get all the, like, my family together, and everyone would leave the table and I would clean up and I'd go drink the excess out of, like, basically just drinking people's backwash. And I would do that. And she's like, that's not normal. And she said, well, would you do that if it was coffee? And I was like, I don't drink coffee. And she did not think that was funny. She let me know. Right. But it took me a minute, but you know, I was able to see how, you know, that fear that I had of like, I am not going to be able to put down a drink one day. I'd like, my alcoholism was arrested at a point that like things didn't have to get so bad, but I had the phenomenon of craving, and I absolutely have the peculiar mental twist that would always lead me back. And that's what I believe. There's a man who used to be in the group that I got sober, Jack E, who talks about, when I say I am alcoholic, what I am saying is that I will drink again. And that is a fact. And I don't know when that will be. I don't know what it'll look like. I just know that it will happen eventually and it will be horrible. But if I stay here, I have a daily reprieve. And if I stay here, I've got a pretty good chance of that not having to happen. And that's why I continue to stay. You know, and after that, I felt connected here for the first time, and things got better, you know? So, and it's like so amazing. Like it says in the literature, like, if you want what we have, do what we do. It's like, if you do the steps, it works. So yeah, if you want to feel better here, the answer is in the steps. And it was highlighted to me how it says at the end of the 12th step, having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps. So that happens as a result of the 12 steps completed in order to completion in their entirety. So when I'm like sitting, writing my fourth step and losing my mind, wondering where God is, you know, I'm not even really supposed to have that relationship. And it says too, I think it's in, I want to say it's in More About Alcoholism, how it talks about, it basically, I love More About Alcoholism as a chapter, because it basically explains like, if you have alcoholism, you're screwed. Like this isn't great. And you know, then in There a Solution, it talks about, but there is there a solution. And it talks about how, you know, at certain times the alcoholic will have no mental defense against the first drink, and their defense must come from a higher power. And then it will ask, well, how do you do that? And the very next paragraph is, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main purpose is to enable you to find a higher power that will solve your problems. Like, it's right there, my guys. Like, every time, I swear, to me, Emma and Sarah all have the same sponsor. And I don't know if she does this with you guys, but I'll call her up and she'll be like, well, let's look at what the big book says about that. And she's like, see, it's right there. So the next time you're confused, you can just look at that page. It's right there. You know, like, things had to be spelled out really plainly for me. Things, you know, got better. I started to move through the steps. I did several fourth and fifth steps with that sponsor. And I gotta be honest, four and five, I just felt really bad, to be quite honest. I know people would talk about how, like, I saw so much about myself and my patterns. And I'm like, I just cried like a whole lot. I wasn't having a great time, but I wrote my eighth step and that's where I saw myself, you know? And I think, you know, my fourth step, I get to see how my actions affect myself and how I contribute to some of my own pain. And in step eight, I get to see how my actions affect my relationships and affect other people. And, I was probably like, I remember I sat on that for a little while and I think it was maybe like 3 years sober. And I had this, period where I was like, I mean, like I said, I got here really young and this is an excuse, but I had to grow up here. And there were things like instinctively that like, you would think that you don't have to know that you're going to get burned to touch the hot stove. Like, you would think that if the stove is hot, like if you touch it, it would hurt. But there were things I had to learn, you know, and I had this stretch right around that time where I was young and I had like finally like started to feel a little better. And, but then I just like went, you know, off the rails. I remember I had this semester in college where I made amends to the same professor in a 6 week period, 3 times, poor woman. She actually gave me an A. I didn't deserve it, but God rest her soul, you know? And, I had this summer where I had like several boyfriends who did not know about each other. I had this summer where, and then I was like, you know, stealing from work and, you know, doing all these crazy things. And I was dishonest about a lot of it. And I just remember, but the funny thing, like I was doing all of this and then I was going home and I was like reading 6 and 7 out of the 12 and 12 every night as if it was do something, but it actually did, you know, because I found myself this like 6 month period where I was doing a lot of things that I was hearing people in meetings would share about, I did that and I drank over it. And I'm like doing it. But something was going on where I guess, and I'm not saying this as a justification to do whatever you want. No, I didn't say that. But there was, I was doing enough in Alcoholics Anonymous that when those actions caught up to me, I had something to fall back on. And that doesn't mean it was pretty. It was actually really painful. And what it came to was, I was about 3.5 years sober and I couldn't really hear my sponsor anymore. And I just, I remember having this thought, it was kind of similar to about 2 years prior. I've got about 5 minutes, right? To about 2 years prior when I was like here and saw people getting better, where really what I saw was like, you know, we had been here for a few years and the people that I came in with had some level of, it talks about over time, you will develop intuitive thought. And I didn't have that. You know, I felt like I could not trust my own shadow. I felt like my head was always lying to me and because I was taking a lot of shady actions, right? But I was also a kid. Like, I did not know what was going on. And I felt like I had to run every single action that I took by somebody, which is great when you're new, but at some point you're supposed to develop a higher power. and I didn't have that. But I remember very clearly having this thought of, if I do not get some self-esteem and quickly, I am not going to stay here for much longer. I found there was like, I remember like making the decision that like, I need to do something. And my current sponsor spoke at what was my home group for a woman who's, you know, now my pigeon sister. And I felt, if this was a meeting, there were about, at that time, there were 400 people in the meeting, but she was speaking directly to me. And I am convinced of that. You know, I was the only person in that meeting she was talking to. And I called her the next day. And this was a woman that like, I had been terrified to speak to. And we talked and it turns out she had had some similar experiences. And, a couple of days later, we had made a date for the following week, but a couple of days later, I saw her at a meeting and I don't remember this. She said, I approached her like, we just do this. I was just like, I need to do something different. And she took me through the steps as well. And since then, nothing has been the same. You know, and that was shortly before the pandemic. And, you know, and a lot changed with that, as it did for all of us. And I am very grateful that I chose to stay during that time, because it was difficult, you know, and there were times where I did not want to, and not just because of the pandemic, but just because like of where I was at. Like, my experience has not been that of someone who gets sober and things get great. You know, I had a lot of growing up to do. Like, I didn't have any years where I was just like doing well. It was like, I was a child and then I started dying. and then I come here and I have a lot to figure out and I have a lot to learn. And I remember like crying to her and my roommates of just like, I want to stay here. But I am just so disenchanted with what Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer me right now, because I was growing and it didn't feel good. And it was really hard. And she told me to just stay the course, and she would share her experience with me. And I remember like in the beginning of the pandemic, I fell on a lot of financial hardship. I was laid off, but because of a problem with my social security number, I couldn't get unemployment. I had no income and I had no idea what I was going to do. And she would tell me about how, like, when she was my age and she was living in New York, and I would call her sometimes like asking for a bedtime story. Can you tell me about when you were in New York and you were really broke, but it was okay. And I started to, you know, I didn't know if I trusted my own higher power, but I certainly trusted that of those around me. You know, and I wrote another 8-step, and I wrote a lot of really big inventories around that time, where I was in a point where I finally wanted to make amends to my parents. I finally felt that I could, but I had this itch, and I wrote this other 4-step, and all this stuff came out. It was a can of worms that I didn't know that I had, and like things that I had never talked about. And I found myself like being resentful at all these people in my life over again. I was like, what do I do with this? And people had to help me grow through that point too, because I was like 4 or 5 years sober and I felt newer than I had ever been. And it was this really like the last, I feel like I'm kind of coming out of it now, but the last like year and a half was this really dark spot where I had like taken all this inventory, and then I had something really horrible happen at my job that was incredibly traumatic. And I was like dealing with that, and I had moved away and then moved back, and I didn't want to. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know if I'm going to stay sober. I don't know if I'm going to stay alive. And I felt like I had absolutely nothing to offer anybody. And everyone was telling me, just continue to go to meetings and help people and be of service and it will all be okay. And I didn't believe them. You know, I absolutely didn't believe them at all. And, you know, because I, like I said, like at the beginning of my talk, I talked about how, like, if you take a certain action, you will get a certain result. So I'm like, I'm going to meetings and I'm talking to my sponsor and I'm doing service and I am not feeling better. So what's the catch? Are you lying to me, or what happens here? Like, am I one of those people who is sicker than other people? And I mean, I might be, I don't know. But, you know, thank God I've been able to find some like-minded people, and I'll finish up here in a second. But I remember when I moved to Norfolk, Virginia to go to school, and I moved back 6 months later, and I was planning to stay there for several years. And when I came back, I had just like, you know, I'd been through this horrible thing at my job. I was like, had gone over this like inventory about my family and some things that had happened, and I was not doing great. And I had almost 5 years sober, and I was supposed to celebrate at my home group, and I couldn't go because I was like, I couldn't even leave my house. It was horrible. And I was like, this is not what Alcoholics Anonymous produces. And like, what is wrong with me? And people were like really loving and really gentle with me through that time. And it was the first time that I actually like, I did not have the luxury of caring what people thought about me. And it was the first time I fell apart and I actually let you guys help me, and I actually let people be there for me. And it was the first time that Alcoholics Anonymous was just a place that I came to get sober and stay sober, and literally nothing else. And, you know, I found myself developing some of the strongest relationships I ever had through that time period, and being useful to people in ways that I never would have guessed, you know. And I was not like this beacon of hope, but if you were having a bad time, you could come sit with me, and at least you wouldn't be alone, because I wasn't having a good time either. And Alcoholics Anonymous stopped being a place where I go to get my gold star and to have, like, I loved people seeing me do a lot of service. And it started becoming, like, I'll put it simply, and then I'll wrap up. You know, my sponsor was telling me that, like, we are not who we are in spite of our experiences. We are who we are because of our experiences. And I don't come here to prevent these things from occurring. I don't come here to prevent resentment. I don't come here to prevent fear. I don't come here to prevent self-will, but I come here so that I have some, so that I have a solution when those things happen. It talks about how without a spiritual solution, the alcoholic will not be able to survive the certain low spots and trials ahead, as in they will happen. But that this is just a way of life for me. And it is so much easier that way. I'm so grateful to be able to, you know, come here and share that with you guys, and to be able to share that with women like Emma and Sarah. My relationships with you are so beautiful. So I've spoken long enough, and I hope that everyone has the chance to find what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you so much. Thank you for letting me share.
Zoe, thank you so much.